I think in any circumstance, the most important thing you can do when you're trying to get a sense of quantifying risk or getting an idea of a risk profile from across the attack surface, you have to first get visibility and understand what exactly is my footprint.
You're listening to KBcast, the cybersecurity podcast for all executives. Cutting through the jargon and hype to understand the landscape where risk and technology meet. Now, here's your host, Carissa Breen.
Hey everyone, it's KB. Thank you for being an active listener on the show. And thanks to you, we've been downloaded in 63 countries. If you haven't already, please ensure that you follow and subscribe to the show for the latest updates. Now, time to get to the interview. Joining me today is Glenn Penley, Chief Technology Officer from Tenable. And today we're discussing today's attack surface, which isn't siloed. So Glenn, thanks so much for joining. It's wonderful to have you here. I know we've tried to reschedule a few times, but it's wonderful to have this discussion with you today because I'm super interested on this topic and I want to know more about it. So let's start with your thoughts on today's attack surface. Now, I know that when we say today, every day changes in the cybersecurity world, every second changes. But as of today, talk me through what's happening and what you're seeing from your perspective.
First of all, thank you for having me. I'm sorry for having to reschedule a few times. So as far as attack surface and what's happening, it's just interesting that, you know, technology has just been changing so quickly. I mean, we see it between like just what our phones have done and tablets to the cloud to the way people write applications. Just so many things have just changed so exponentially faster than I think many organizations are capable of keeping up with. And I think what businesses are trying to accomplish is, you know, they try to take advantage of this new technology that's coming out. And in an effort to modernize and provide a better product or offering, you know, that whatever their business is, you know, trying to provide to their customers, users, whatever, the fact that they don't fundamentally understand the technology that they're starting to leverage introduces a huge amount of risk. And security teams in a lot of these organizations are left, you know, behind the eight ball, attempting to, you know, make the best out of a bad situation in a lot of cases. So, you know, I think, you know, it's only going to get worse. And I think that the more new things are being introduced, you see ChatGPT, you see like all of the stuff, and people get crazy excited about it. And it's like, oh, we need to start using it, not really thinking through the implications of what introducing new technology into their environment does, just blowing up the amount of the logical and physical attack surface that they need to try to secure, what it's really doing to their security teams and how those security teams are, you know, trying to keep up with the business.
So you mentioned before, Glenn, that, you know, people don't really understand like their technology and how to leverage it. So what do you sort of mean by that? Now, this is an interesting question. I was speaking to someone on the show, I think last week, and they were sort of saying generally an average company here in Australia uses between 75 to 100 different tools, and that's a lot. And then they were sort of just saying like a lot of those tools, there's a lot of overlap, or they don't use them, or they're obsolete, or someone's left the business and no one even knew that they even bought this tool. So talk to me a little bit more about how that works from your perspective.
There's tons of different examples. Like there's, you know, kind of obvious examples of like the adoption of public cloud, you know, whether, you know, AWS, Azure, GCP, you know, there's tons of new cloud providers being, you know, spun up nowadays. The idea of like how best to leverage like infrastructure that you typically don't manage in the whole shared responsibility model, like that's a big part of it. But even as cloud service providers introduce new ways of managing the infrastructure that they make available to you to use, introduces a ton of different risk. And again, people, especially like engineers and technology people, you know, they get excited like, oh, you know, AWS just launched, you know, let's just say like Lambda functions, like serverless technology. Let's try to use that. Not really understanding, you know, the potential security impacts or even from a cost perspective impacts a lot of things. They just try to do it in order to kind of keep up to date or try new things. There are other examples where, you know, you think about, you know, everybody uses Slack or some sort of messaging tool, right? And, you know, for example, in Tenable, we use Slack and we use Zoom for like, you know, communications and stuff. But within Slack, you can start a Zoom meeting. So the idea that you have different SaaS applications that are like intrinsically linked through like your identity and stuff like that, and just the risk of just how many different pieces of technology are interconnected and talking, and people have no, like so many people have no idea the risk that they're introducing, you know, into the environment because of just ease of use of stuff, whether it's individual users, whether it's administrators, whether it's people from all over the business trying to do what they need to in order to solve whatever it is their problem is. I mean, just think about it. Like the amount of people, let's say you're using Gmail or even Office 365 or just some sort of like SaaS application for your mail. Let's say I want to use a calendar application because I like the way the features and stuff like that. So now that application that I downloaded that I'm using is now needs access to connect to my mailbox and my calendar and all this sort of stuff. That introduces risk. Like that's a part of the attack surface that people aren't necessarily considering. A lot of times people are just looking at what servers do I have on the internet? Like what like vulnerabilities do I have in a particular web application? It's only getting worse. There's just so much. Everything is so just connected, and every little change and every little thing that people are introducing and using, you know, in a lot of ways, in positive ways for the business, is just introducing more and more risk.
Okay, that's super interesting. Now, you mentioned before that people just aren't considering it, which I can understand. So for an example, like, I don't know, you're walking down like a dark alley, like maybe people aren't considering their potential risk. Like maybe some people are, maybe some people don't, right? So sometimes it's just being human beings, we're so focused, like you said, on the shiny object of the new technology, for example, that we're not focusing on the potential risk. So how do people sort of get an idea then of the risk? Now, it sounds obvious, like, oh, we've got to do risk management meetings and we've got to have our, you know, our risk matrix and we've got to have business risk and tech risk, all that. I get that. But how do we actually implement, okay, we've got all these things that are interconnected that you mentioned before, Glenn, but how do we actually think that there could be these risks, and then how do we sort of manage that ongoing? Because it sounds easy in theory, but in practicality, this is hard.
It is hard. And it's interesting. There's a, you know, I've been in cybersecurity since the late 90s, early 2000s, and there are certain fundamental principles that have applied since day one. And like, first and foremost, like visibility is such an important thing. And I think a lot of people don't understand the risk that they're introducing by using new technology or just doing things to drive the business forward. And that when you shine a light on it and when you actually like show people, look at everything that's being used or how this is being used, it introduces like a light bulb kind of moment for a lot of people. And if they don't even know something exists, you know, ignorance is bliss. So I think in any circumstance, the most important thing you can do when you're trying to get a sense of quantifying risk or just getting an idea of a risk profile from across the attack surface, you have to first get visibility and understand what exactly is my footprint. Again, whether it's servers on the internet or applications being used and SaaS applications talking to each other, whatever it might be, it's super interesting, that sort of light bulb moment when you can just show people or have them get an idea of what it is that they have. Usually that's when behavior changes because they don't know. You don't know what you don't know.
So true. Now, okay, you mentioned before as well that the attack surface isn't siloed. So what do you sort of mean by this specifically?
So when you look at the security space today, it's interesting. And people like security vendors, they build tools and they're trying to stop a certain thing, right? Like you can't be all things to all people. And so what you'll see is somebody will build a product, you know, start a company that is focused on doing cloud security. You'll have another company that's focused on doing endpoint protection. You have another. So you have all of these just products and things that are trying to do the best job that they can do in securing an individual piece of the attack surface. The problem is that nothing happens in a vacuum. Like a good example that I tell people about this is you can buy a cloud security product today and deploy it perfectly. And let's pretend for a second you have it absolutely as secure as you can possibly get. It's a perfect environment from a security perspective based on what that security tool is telling you. You would then think, based on what that product is telling you, that you have no risk in your cloud environment. However, that's not necessarily true when you think of the reality of the situation. So let's pretend for a second, you and I are, you know, DevOps folks that manage the cloud, and the hygiene on our machines are terrible. And let's say, you know, I'm a mouth breather that clicks on every link that gets sent to me in my inbox, and I have a bunch of vulnerabilities, and like, I just have bad hygiene. I'm not using endpoint protection. There's no firewall. It's just a bad hygiene on my system. How secure is your cloud environment at that point? If you really think about it, right? Like, if I get exploited, you're done. Because the access that I have, you know, I can connect to anything in that cloud environment. I can change things. I can do stuff and all that. So when you look at and you attempt, and security teams are attempting to try to secure these different parts of the attack surface, we as the security industry, we haven't done them any favors up to this point, because we've built tools and they're doing the best that they can. And they're like, oh, I'm secure because my cloud security tool, I've been, you know, remediating these critical alerts and over here and here and here. But everything is interconnected. Nothing happens in a vacuum. You know, I mean, I could just rattle off a bunch of examples. Ransomware attacks happen not because a particular vulnerability exists on somebody's laptop or a server. It's a combination of things. And because security tools aren't looking at everything as a whole, it's super hard for security teams to be successful, because nobody's putting the pieces together in a way that shows the context of everything in that particular environment and trying to tie those pieces together.
So why aren't people looking at how the pieces connect together?
Well, A, it's a very hard job, and it's interesting. So, I mean, at Tenable, that is what we're attempting to do. And we introduced new technology, and like, the vision where we're going is specifically focused on doing just that. The reason why it hasn't been done to date is, like I said, it's an extremely difficult problem to solve. And the reason being is there have been security tools in the past that have tried to do a good job of bringing data together and trying to kind of programmatically identify certain things in the environment that behavior is happening, or something is based on certain things that are happening that a particular attack is ongoing or has happened. And, you know, when you think of like XDR, for example, it's a great example of bringing together a whole bunch of data and trying to, you know, programmatically say, hey, this attack is happening because I see the behavior. This system is doing this and you have this configured, blah, blah, blah. And it tries to say this attack is happening. When it comes to more of like the preventative security side, like how, like enabling people to try to secure their environment before an attack actually happens, there are so many different aspects that goes into trying to identify what I call applied risk. And it's an extremely difficult job. You have to treat it like a big data problem. And even when you look at preventative security tools in the past, and there's been a few that have attempted to do it, they always look at like a single variable in the equation. They'll say like, oh, I'm going to bring together all these vulnerabilities and I'll put a machine learning model algorithm on top of like all the information I have, and I'll better help you prioritize which things to go patch. The problem with that is your vulnerabilities really don't matter in a vacuum. You know, and an example is, if let's say you and I, let's say we're both using a MacBook Pro, just a laptop of some sort, and we both have the absolute worst vulnerability in the world on it. Every single security tool in the world will tell you, well, both of those are equally bad. But the truth is, in reality, and what security folks are dealt with dealing is that, depending on how your machine is configured versus how my machine is configured, depending on what access you have to what systems compared to what I have, that vulnerability fundamentally could have very different meaning in reality. So if let's say your laptop is locked down, you have updated endpoint protection, you know, you're using multi-factor authentication all over the place, and I don't do any of that, that same vulnerability, which one is more risky? Like objectively, like this isn't like, without a doubt, my vulnerability at my laptop is at much more at risk to the business than yours. And the issue is tying, understanding all of those aspects, building relationships between all that information and using that to quantify risk is a very hard job to do. And that's, you know, that's what we're trying to do now. And that's kind of like what we've been working towards based on the, you know, acquisitions we've made and what we've been building organically. But it's hard. It's a very different approach to preventative security than what people have done in the past.
Okay, so I'm curious now to know from your perspective, Glenn. So you mentioned the why, but now I want to focus on the how. So like, how can people start, you know, people who are listening are like, okay, Glenn makes a great point, a profound point. How can people sort of work on getting better at that? Now, I know like after listening to this, like people are not going to, it's not going to be a flick of a switch and then all of a sudden everything's perfect. That's not reality. That's not how it works. It's progress and it's more of a Kaizen sort of strategy. But like what can people start doing today? If they're like, oh, that's probably me that's in that bucket. Do you have any sort of advice that people can take away from today's interview?
From a technology problem, nobody's really there yet. And I think we're close and we're about to be there, but like you could still make a lot of progress on your own. You have to consider, and it's hard, like, cause for somebody to do this kind of on their own, and this is where the challenge is and why people really haven't done it, is you have to build those relationships. Like you have to know who you and I are. You have to know what those laptops are and how they're configured to do that. You can do that job manually through all these different tools. You can export data out. You can dump it into, you know, a data lake. You can put in Excel spreadsheets. Like there's a manual way to do it. But I think what's important is when you're looking at trying to quantify risk and trying to prioritize what you need to do in order to legitimately reduce risk in the environment, be cognizant of like the context of that vulnerability or that configuration or whatever's out of compliance, because that is what real risk is about to the business. You know, it's interesting. Like you see a lot of tools out there trying to quantify risk and they're doing it based on a generalized sort of sense, like however they're quantifying it, whatever model or whatever equation that they're using. And the issue is every single environment is different and what risk means to you might mean something fundamentally different to me. However, what is universally true is that there are, like if you're grading everything on a scale, certain, like the way certain things are set up and the way things are run in your environment, some things are more at risk than others. And as long as you're trying to rationalize that concept and trying to bring context together and attempt to identify what that context is, you're going to do a much better job of actually reducing risk in your environment.
Okay, so I want to sort of switch gears now for a second and I'm curious to know how the attack surface sort of changed over time and then what can we expect to see moving forward? As you sort of mentioned before, Glenn, it's going to get worse. A lot of things are more interconnected now. There's a lot more things dependent on certain technologies nowadays. What are you sort of seeing? Now, I know that you don't necessarily have a crystal ball. You can sort of predict the future, but again, it's, you know, the show is more just about having those conversations, hearing your insights, mm-hmm. hearing your knowledge. And then hoping, you know, we can learn something from what people like yourself share on the show today.
If you look at how things have evolved since kind of the internet became a thing and businesses started legitimately using the internet and just networking in general to do business, things have really started to go from a more like centralized sort of management of things. Like if you think about it, like in the late 90s, early 2000s, pretty much through probably, you know, the early teens, the way that, you know, the responsibility of the attack surface was very, I have a DMZ of systems that I manage, I control. Everything is like, I own it. I am the control, like I'm the master of my own destiny when it comes to trying to secure things. Everybody sat in an office, all the laptops and things that people used, it was very contained. And with that containment, it's so much easier to like get a handle on what it is that people are doing, how they're doing it, and all this other stuff. It was simpler to try to secure. Then came, you know, the emergence of like public cloud. And at that point, you don't really have control anymore. And, you know, things just started breaking out a little bit. So that started getting more difficult. And as more services in these public cloud sort of CSPs start evolving, it just is going to get harder and harder. And then you couple on kind of the end of that, you start seeing the emergence of, you know, phones and people kind of, their machine is no longer just necessarily a laptop in an office. It's also their phone. So basically, I can go through a bunch of different examples here, but the point is everything is getting more and more distributed and the ability of people who are responsible for securing the environment is just, it's getting way more difficult. And I think it's only going to get worse. you know, with the pandemic, everybody started working from home. So it just exponentially got worse. We start thinking about phones and even corporate laptops, not even just running off of somebody's home network. And I think, you know, you start looking at 5G and the opportunity for people spinning up entire networks now that are completely, you know, just the possible implications of what 5G could do if it's implemented in the way and adopted like it could in theory. It's just going to be a nightmare because everything is getting more and more distributed and getting visibility is just going to get harder and harder.
So do you sort of think over time, so the gap between doing best practice security and, like you said before, it's getting worse, is that going to get bigger, or do you think it'll sort of just stay the same as it is now? Because, like, you know, our security is still getting better, but at the same time, everything around us is getting worse. But do you see there be a massive delta sort of moving forward, or like, what do you sort of think?
I think two things. I think that it's going to get like the gap, because I mean, if we agree that the visibility is first and foremost the most important thing you need to get, I think the gap in getting visibility is going to get harder and harder. I just feel that's going to be an unequivocal truth. I do think though that what will always be the case when it comes to security is doing the basics will save you 99% of the time. And it's like, if you really look at all the different attacks that have happened over the last like few years and over time, so few of them were like really, you know, nation state, super targeted, crazy sort of attacks that you're just kind of like, throw up your hands and be like, there's no chance I could do that. 99% of all attacks are because people weren't doing the basics. So if you're at least doing the basics on what you know about, that's going to save you 9 times out of 10. And the better job that you do of, you know, getting better visibility and then just applying basic cyber hygiene on what you have visibility on, it's, you know, you don't need crazy, you know, products and AI and ML and try to detect all this stuff. If you just do basic cyber hygiene ahead of time, majority of attacks will never happen against you, because, you know, if you're doing the basics, so the way attackers actually work is they're like water. They find the path of least resistance. If you make it a little bit too difficult for them to deal with, they're just going to move on. So I think there's always going to be a constant of just doing basic cyber hygiene is going to be always true. It's going to be harder and harder to get visibility to know what to apply the basic cyber hygiene on.
Okay, so there's a couple of things in there that I'm really interested on. Now, you said that the gap is going to get harder with visibility. So when you say that, do you mean because of, like you said before, people working from home, people got, you know, they're using home networks, they've got BYOD, whether it's a phone, whether it's a machine. Is that what you mean by the visibility is going to get harder? Because people all over the shop now, you know, people don't even know what's going on. They don't know who's in the company now, because people have been hired in, you know, in the middle of Timbuktu. Like it's harder than it was before. Whereas before it was, we go to an office and then we're all there and we know exactly who's here and who's working here. But now we don't even know what's happening. There could be staff being hired left, right, and center that people and other teams wouldn't even know about because they don't see them.
Yep. I mean that, and then you couple all of that just unknown because people aren't coming in. It gets harder to use like certain tools that show what's happening in the environment to kind of infer a lot of things. So if let's say you and I work for Acme Corp and we both sit at home and we're doing what we're doing, and you decide to install a piece of software on your laptop because, you know, you're writing an application and it's, you know, this new IDE is going to make life so much better for you. So you install it and you start doing your thing. If I'm a security person, I might have no idea that you did that. Like it could be an open source tool that's just a Trojan for some sort of piece of malware. Like who knows, you know? So when you think about the applications that people are using because things are less controlled and it's so disparate, and then think of all the SaaS applications that people are using too, and you go back to the interconnectedness, it's just, you know, like people like fundamentally have no idea how their users are using applications because they don't have any control on those applications. Couple that with people using a number of different devices to do all this work spread out all over the world, it is extremely difficult.
Now, the other thing I want to ask is the basics. Now, I have spoken to many people on the show about basics. Now, what you're saying makes sense, right? But there's a couple of things in there which I want to know more about, because we can't do the basics. Now, what I mean by that is, you mentioned it before that we're, you know, a lot of people in this space, obviously technologists like yourself, Glenn, like they're very focused on, ooh, shiny, new object, new tool, new flashing light, new box, whatever it is. And then the basics go out the window. Why? Maybe there's the banality of doing the basics, but you said before, like 9 times out of 10, we would have a lot less security incidents. But we as a group of people can't get that right. Makes sense. Like, oh, endpoint protection, doing patch management. People have been talking about this for 20 plus years. We still can't do that. Why can't people do the basics? And I don't know if the basics are basic though, because we can't do them.
That's a good point. You'd be surprised. You know, I've been at Tenable 13 years now dealing with like the vulnerability space and doing all this. And here's a little like true story. And this is right before the pandemic. I did a CISO roundtable, and you know, I was kind of managing it. You know, like in these sort of things, you don't sit there and try to lead the witness. You just kind of foster the conversation. And it was it was about vulnerabilities and stuff like that. And every single person, CISO, in that room, you know, as a part of the conversation, none of those people that were sitting in that room actually tried to find and identify vulnerabilities on their endpoints. Like what they were scanning, what they were trying to get visibility into were just their servers. And it blew my mind, because the way attacks actually work today, it's not, you know, 2000 and people aren't, you know, firing off like worms and stuff like that, attacking servers directly. They go after users and like send phishing things and take advantage of like the weakest link, which are the people. And none of them, and this was only 4 years ago, three or four years ago now, none of them were even doing that. So you would think that like technologists and people that are security people would just innately kind of understand what those basics are, and they would be doing it, or they're attempting, but it's too much. You'd be surprised at how many people just are... They don't even really, I think, understand the first part, which is visibility and focusing on where real risk is originating, or potential risk is originating in their environment. I think for the organizations that are attempting to do it, you bring up a really good point, where the amount of vulnerabilities and the amount of things people are required to patch and ensuring everybody's using MFA and stuff like that, it is a lot of work. And I think that's a part of the problem when it comes to like preventative security. And, you know, I'll be honest, like Tenable, we've contributed to the struggles that people have had to deal with for 20 years of doing the job, where we'll enumerate every single bad thing. Here's, you know, 100,000 vulnerabilities in your environment. Yeah, these are the worst. You know, you only have 4,000 of those. Good luck, Godspeed. And then we just leave people to try to patch everything. And the processes they put in place to try to do that patch management, to do the basics, they're trying to do that job. You're Sisyphus rolling a boulder up a hill. You're never going to be able to patch everything. And I think, you know, to go back to kind of an earlier point, I think what's important and what, you know, we're trying to accomplish is to better identify. If you only have so many things that you can do, only so much time in the day, only so many people to do it. So how do you do a better job of quantifying that applied risk, that these are the patches you need to? Because if something bad happens, this is what's going to actually cause something bad, instead of just saying this one vulnerability is on 1,000 different machines, you need to patch it all. Maybe you only have to patch it on 5 machines because of the way everything else is configured and using all that context. So I think you're right. There are, you know, there are a good amount of people that are trying to do the basics, but they're never going to get it right because there's just too much work to do. And that's, you know, that's, I'm so very passionate about what we're trying to do here, because I feel bad for people that are trying to do the basics and it's just not happening because they just literally can't get it done. So the more that we can do to identify those things and bring that together, it's like, look, you can only do so much. Here's what you need to focus on. If you do this, you know, the chances of something bad happening and there being a downstream impact is mitigated. Because if you think about it, like, having a successful attack doesn't matter, breaches matter. So if I clicked on a link and I got exploited, but there are other compensating controls in place, there are other things where there is not a breach of data or something fundamentally bad happening in the environment, at least it's contained. Whereas if that wasn't the case, if I wasn't prioritized based on the context around me, that's when the bad things actually have an impact.
Totally get it. I still want to press on this point a little bit more because I find this very fascinating. Now, I'm not negating that, of course, doing the basics, like you said, it's hard, right? It's 100% it's hard. But I guess it's just more so that the attitude towards certain security professionals is, oh, just do the basics, like as if it's like super easy to do. Now, the analogy I like to draw on is it's like, okay, people say I've got to lose weight. It's pretty obvious how you lose weight. You eat correctly, you eat less, and you exercise. Yet people all over the world, they struggle. They're trying to find ways, diet pills and these shakes and doing whatever it is, some fancy, ridiculous exercise or whatever it is. And yet it's like if you just do the basics, which is eat less and exercise, you would then lose weight. But yet as human beings, we try to find all these sort of, you know, strange ways of circumventing just doing the basics. And I think the same sort of theory applies to cybersecurity, which what you and I have spoken a lot about today, Glenn. So the basics, like you mentioned before, but then we're also, you know, we're trying to find like, oh, like let's just look at bringing this tool that's going to have AI and ML to help, you know, detect all, you know, all of these vulnerabilities rather than defaulting to the basics. So I guess that brings me to my next point, which is you mentioned before about that CISO roundtable that you had, and you were perplexed why none of these CISOs were again doing the basics, but why were none of them doing that? Why didn't they think of that? Because again, like how can we say it's basic when it's not that basic?
Yeah. So 2 points. I do agree with you. And you know, I'll be totally honest. As an industry, from a security vendor perspective, we haven't enabled people to do the basics at scale. Like that's the truth. You know, what Tenable, obviously I'm biased. I think we do the best job of identifying vulnerabilities and like what needs to be addressed from a, you know, these are the things that you need to address and that will help. But because the attack surface isn't siloed, because there's more to it than just a vulnerability, all that context matters. And because as an industry, we haven't guided people in how best to apply the basics to what to actually reduce that like functional applied risk. They're looking at every tool individually and they're trying to just do the best they can. So I think everybody, like your point is spot on and I not argue with you. It's products, security products just tell you everything bad. And again, looking, they're the nail or they're the hammer. What they see is the nail. And they throw that at people and then they're floundering. And that's just, again, something that I'm very passionate about and why the vision I have for Tenable is to actually enable people to do this. When it comes to the CISO roundtable, I actually kind of broke protocol and because I was completely perplexed. And in this particular case, when I was like, wait a minute, and I had to ask him, I'm like, so you guys don't, you know, you're not even looking at, you know, the vulnerabilities, the configuration, or how like your users and their systems. They said, no, they're like, those aren't the important assets. That's not what's important in my environment. My servers are what's important. And again, I wasn't going to sit there and try to shame people. And hopefully none of those people that were in that roundtable are listening to this, but like to them, like their idea of how, like the reality of how attackers think and it was just very outdated and flawed. You know, they were trying to do what they thought were the basics on just a very small subset of the attack surface that isn't even the most targeted part of the attack surface. So to me, it was more of them not doing the basics or understanding the basics. I think it was bigger than that, to be completely honest. It really did. It was very confusing to me for them to not even like understand the fundamentals of client-side attacks and what that means and how things work. So I think that particular use case scenario was just, hopefully that's just an outlier as far as how people think.
Yeah, and I get that. And it's not like a matter of like making people feel bad. It's just more so that if people aren't doing it, again, it's not that basic. So it's more so the mentality behind it. But you mentioned before that, you know, how do we enable people? You gave an example that for, you know, there's a lot of things going on in an organization. Of course, you can't sort of can't manage everything, but perhaps, for example, like you could patch 5 machines versus 1,000 because 5 of those have the vulnerability. How do you get to the 5? How do you sort of go, okay, these are the 5, this is all we need to do? That way you're not sort of overcooking it. How do you sort of just cook it just right by just managing those 5 machines and forgetting the rest?
So, and this is, again, this is, you know, what we are working on and what we're trying to accomplish here. So I'll go through like a thought exercise. Let's say you have 1,000 machines in your environment that have a bad vulnerability, like an exploitable, the same vulnerability on 1,000 machines. What everybody in Tenable, you know, historically would tell you is you need to patch those 1,000 machines. And people are like, that's a lie. And you have to go through the process, change control, blah, blah, blah. But in reality, if you have enough information about everything in the environment, you can start doing very interesting things to kind of focus down in this case, let's say the 5 that matter. So let's say out of that 1,000, there were 5 machines being used by somebody that were in an AD group, like Active Directory group. And somebody in the Active Directory organization, like that manages AD and identity for an organization, happens to make a GPO change one day. And that GPO change now introduces a privilege escalation attack for those people that are in that group. So now, if you think from like how ransomware works, now, the people with 5, like using those 5 machines, that same vulnerability that's on, you know, 995 other machines, because of the people using those 5 machines, if that vulnerability got exploited on one of those 5, because of the way Active Directory is configured, they are now susceptible to a privilege escalation ransomware attack. So how do you know that? Like with traditional tools, they would just say you still have to patch all 1,000 because the vulnerability is bad. We know the vulnerability is bad. But if you can't patch 1,000 for whatever reason, you only wanted to focus on the 5. So if there was a way to identify the fact that because of this GPO and because of the people in this group and the way that GPO is configured, then those 5 machines and that vulnerability is actually way more important than those other 995 instances of it. So you can fix the GPO, which you should fix, like the change in Active Directory, as well as patching these 5 machines. So that's the idea of like treating this as a big data problem of pulling data in from so many different sources, building relationships and trying to like identify really what matters in an environment. It's not that those other 995 aren't important and that shouldn't patch them, but you can't do everything, especially when you have so many things to do. So focus on that 5. And the reason why you need to focus on that 5 is because of, you know, all the things I said that could lead to a, you know, a privilege escalation ransomware attack.
So just to sort of go on this a little bit, because like, again, this is something that I'm super interested in, and it's something that I've often spoken about in the show. So you're saying before around, yes, focusing on the 5, and I get that from a, you know, priority perspective. Technically, the other 995 do matter, but again, we're focusing on the 5 for this particular instance. If we get to the 5 and we focus on the 5, will that then mean that doing the basics becomes more basic because we're only then focusing on those 5? We're not trying to boil the ocean here. We're just focusing on those priorities because they're the ones with the vulnerabilities, which could have the escalation, etc. Will that then prove the point of the basics?
I think the basics become achievable. The basics are the basics. Like it's a constant. Like, and I think everybody knows what needs to be done. But to your earlier point, applying it is very difficult, and it's just because there's just it's extremely difficult to do because there's just too much. Like you just literally can't do enough work to do the basics on everything. So I think in this case, it's an achievable goal. Like you're identifying what is more important based on the context of the environment, all the stuff we said. So applying the basics there, whether it's patching, fixing the GPO and Active Directory and doing those sort of things, like that's achievable. Like patching 5 machines is much easier than patching 1,000. Fixing one AD misconfiguration, you know, is achievable versus trying to identify all, you know, people that are over provisioned and, you know, whatever that might be from just like, you know, an identity security perspective. So I just think they're easier pills to swallow and it's more achievable. And that's, you know, the goal of like reducing risk, like actionable, real risk, it's possible if you have achievable things to, you know, to address in an attack.
So I guess that's the operative word, achievable. So maybe we need to frame it in security, like do the achievable basics. That way you're not overwhelmed. You're not trying to boil the ocean. You're not trying to do everything because doing everything is hard. But let's just focus on, for example, the 5. focus on that, remediating that, patching that. That's achievable and handable rather than focusing on the whole 1,000.
Yes.
Right.
And the only way you're going to know the achievable, though, is if you're using that context and understanding more. Because, again, in the way every security tool up to this point has really tried to do it, is they're only looking at that one variable in the equation. So you're still stuck at the 1,000. So you're never going to get those smaller achievable bites.
So do you think this is the big problem here? Like this is what people are struggling with? Because again, like as we've spoken about at length, that we all go around saying, oh, it's the basics, but there's too much of it to handle. But again, if we're sort of isolating maybe some of these higher priority related, you know, the 5, for example, focusing on that again, that's what's going to become achievable. And then yes, of course, you can go back to focusing on everything else, or else when you're trying to do too much, it's too hard to handle, too hard to manage. And then what do? You just sort of give up and you don't bother anymore, which is probably the situation exactly that we're in as an industry at the moment. We're overwhelmed, we're overworked.
It's interesting in the traditional vulnerability management space. I know it's true. Like I've been doing this for a while now. People don't scan everything, not because they don't know they can't do it. They can't already fix what we tell them today. So why are they going to just do more? It's just overwhelming for them. So I'm not saying I'm betting the company on this, but like my vision for what we're doing and what I feel so passionate, and this is what we're working towards, you know, we're trying to achieve is enabling people to take those bite-sized bites by doing the hard job for them of driving that context. And yeah, I think it's achievable. I think we've come a long way in being able to do it. And we're about to start rolling out some extremely interesting ways of trying to make this a reality.
So to bring this sort of a bit more full circle now, how would you, or what would be your advice to those who are unaware of how to handle and manage the forever changing sort of attack landscape? Like we've honed in on the basic side of things and other things earlier today around the interdependencies, looking at risk. But again, I'm very always mindful of providing sort of tangible insights for people on the show that they can start to implement or start to talk about within their organization.
There's a lot. I think a few things. So first of all is understand that like there's so much more to the attack surface than you probably think, and making a commitment to at least trying to find ways to get the visibility necessary. Like really like sit down and think, what applications are we using? Whether it's SaaS applications, managed applications in the cloud, it doesn't matter. Really start to like work backwards from, you know, how your organization is doing business and the tools that they use, and try to kind of audit what that means and get put together a plan to try to get the visibility necessary. I also think it's, you know, important for buy-in from the top of the company all the way down, in order to do like preventative security and the basics, you know, even the consumable basics that we were discussing. It's more than just a security team trying to do it. I think there's fundamental changes that need to happen from a business perspective. You know, there's we have a customer, and it's interesting. It's a very large customer too, that, you know, we deal with the people that are trying to secure their public cloud instances and stuff. And the only way they know about like the things that are out there that their company is dealing with is they have to go to the finance organization and they look at who's paying for like AWS on the corporate credit card. And then they go to that person's like, hey, I see you're spinning up an AWS instance. We need to secure that. So without like guidelines and, you know, more rigor around policy and procedure and how people start leveraging applications or services or whatever it might be, they're never going to be able to get the visibility, first of all, to go back to the first point. And it's there has to be, you know, an all-in buy-in from the top of the company all the way down, and a commitment to doing what is necessary. And too often you don't see that. You know, it's security is kind of either looked at as an inhibitor of the business. And even if they're not enabled from a company perspective to make the hard decisions or put in policies and procedures and things to secure the business as needed.
So just one quick question on that. So in terms of the AWS example, so they only knew about it because of the credit card statement?
Once a month, they would go to their finance department and then say, can we see all of the like the credit card, like people that are putting in expense reports to pay for AWS? And then they would see like who they didn't know and like what wasn't under management from a cloud security perspective. And then they would go to that person and say, what are you doing? And it might be just like a marketing team that spun up for some like marketing campaign. So they had to introduce like some websites and things, promotions or whatever it might be. And I mean, just think about it. Like the whole cloud environment is completely unmanaged. People are like, they probably outsourced a bunch of like developers in middle of nowhere, you know, to write this application. Who knows what vulnerabilities were in the web app? And all of that, you know, it's just kind of running under that company's banner. And the security team had no idea. Like I felt bad for them.
I guess it's not a bad approach though. Like they sort of reverse engineer it. Like let's go to the finance team. Let's look at all the credit cards. Let's look at all their bank accounts. Like what are the charges? So it's not a bad way to approach it. But again, like how would you know, right? Especially now when people are sitting wherever, how would you know? If they got a company credit card and they buy something, you'd never know unless you're doing the reconciliation. But I guess their theory kind of works. I guess this is pretty manual though.
It is manual. And you know, the amount of time that something could have been spun up and running is time that there's potential risk introduced to the environment. Like if, let's say on the first day of the month, I went to the finance team and did that reconciliation. And then on the second day of the month, you spun up an AWS instance and you started doing your thing and deploying applications or whatever it might be. It could be 28, 29 days of absolute anarchy going on with nobody knowing until the first of the next month. And then I come to you, you know, say, hey, what are you doing? And then how long does it take to get visibility from that point forward? It's not like on the next day, all of a sudden I have full visibility into the environment. So it's, you know, it's impressive. They reverse engineered it and they are working through it. But, you know, what would have been a much more sane approach is the company itself said, like, we're not supporting this. Like you can't spin up AWS instances on your credit card. You have to go through here. Like we have to provision and all this other stuff. And what ends up happening, people will, you know, I was going to say the B word, but complain that, oh, you're slowing down business and like, oh, we have this thing. I need to hurry up and move. And so many times the business is like, yeah, business is too important. Do what you got to do. Security is left holding the bag, trying to handle it. Whereas a company that is like serious about like security and trying to like really protect their assets, it'll be like, yeah, I know it's slowing down the potential, you know, opportunity for you to go faster and do this, this, and this, but we're not willing to take the risk. So that's kind of what I mean about, you know, to do a lot of this stuff, you have to have buy-in. A lot of it's process, procedure, and just buy-in from the business to enable security people to do what's necessary.
And I guess, look, I've been in that same situation before. Marketing department were leveraging Dropbox for, I don't know, their advertising company externally with the bank I was working in. And then we found out about it and then there was an issue, but we didn't know about it. Like there would be no way of really having that visibility. So I guess the process and procedure, yes, in theory works, but people go around at all time. That's how we have shadow IT. Oh, you're slowing me down. Or this is a better way to do it because I did it at my last company. So I guess, again, it's hard. And I think it's just going to be constant monitoring. It's going to be probably doing things manually like before. It's going to be having the visibility. It's just that in theory, like, again, like there are laws out there, like you shouldn't speed. People are getting speeding tickets every day. They know you have a driver's license. That's the law. That's the rules. People are still doing it. So I guess it's just, again, goes back to human nature. People like to always follow rules, even if the rules are right in their face. But again, it's up to the teams to find the best practice to help manage that, help reduce it as best as they can.
Yeah, but I would argue that without the rules, like we use your speeding example, if I speed and I get caught, I'm held accountable. If there was no speeding, you know, laws and rules and stuff, I could do it without any repercussions. So at least I agree with you. Shadow IT is a thing and people will circumvent like the rules in place. But if they do that, at least you can hold them accountable when it happens, when you find them. But you can't really hold people accountable for doing what's necessary if you allow it to happen.
100%.
So, yeah.
So I think it's just, yeah, it's important to definitely have those policies and procedures. But again, I think there's always going to be that 1%, 10% of people that don't follow the rules, right? So I guess you've always got to factor that in as this is what people are going to do regardless. So I guess, again, it's not an easy thing to accomplish. So thank you so much, Glenn, for your time and your insights and for coming on the show today.
Yep, thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope that you found today's episode useful and you took away a few key points. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to get our latest episodes.
This podcast is brought to you by MerckSec.
the specialists in security, search, and recruitment solutions. Visit mercsec.com to connect today.
If you'd like to find out how KBI can help grow your cyber business, then please head over to kbi.digital.
This podcast was brought to you by KBI.media, the voice of cyber.